Hello there, and welcome to the Paradox Podcast. We are looking at Proverbs chapter 8 today, and this teaching is entitled The Nature of Wisdom. In 1991, there was one day where my brothers and I were lucky enough to bring home a Super Nintendo. And in this Super Nintendo, we had all of a sudden a custom 3.58 megahertz processor, 128 kilobytes of RAM, and this thing could process 256 colors at a time. In other words, we were living the dream. And on this Super Nintendo, we'd play games that had Super in the title, including Super Mario World, Super Mario Kart, and Super Street Fighter II Turbo, which I'm pretty sure was about evangelism. But then there was this one game that came out, and they used advanced computer modeling to create graphics the likes of which we had never seen. I'm talking about the king of all Super Nintendo games, Donkey Kong Country. And this game blew my mind because, as I said earlier, the graphics were on a whole nother level. Now, at this point, my mom noticed how much I enjoyed playing Super Nintendo, and she would always stress the importance of playing Nintendo in moderation. This was greatly annoying to my 10-year-old lifestyle. And my mom would make sure that we'd play chores and practice piano in order to earn Nintendo time. And even then, Nintendo time was never valued quite the same to my mom as playing outside in the great outdoors. And this got so annoying to me as a 10-year-old that I remember thinking to myself, when I grow up and I'm a parent, I'm going to be a cool parent that lets my kids play as much Super Nintendo as they want. Well, I have grown up, and I have found that we have left the Super Nintendo behind. The Super Nintendo was before the Nintendo 64, which was before the Nintendo GameCube, which was before the Nintendo Wii, which was before Wii U, which is before the current iteration of the Nintendo Switch. And my daughter, at 4 years old, loves playing Mario Kart on the Nintendo Switch. But I found that while I enjoy playing Mario Kart with her, I'd much prefer for her to spend time outside. Not only that, but I found it incredibly rewarding for her to spend time outside. Just a couple weeks ago, my family was fortunate enough to be able to take a trip to Maui in Hawaii. And this trip was something else. We spent hours on the beach. We got to see sea turtles. We got to go hiking through a rainforest, a tropical rainforest on the middle of this island. We got to go to parks outside and we got to see banyan trees. It was a beautiful time outside. And the crown jewel of all of this experience outside was we got to go golfing at a course that was so lax they would let our kids come out on the course. And this course had all sorts of oceanic views and it was something else. We then would go home exhausted at the end of every day. We'd put the kids in bed and we'd lie down in bed, my wife and I could feel the heat still radiating from my skin because we'd spent all day under the sun. And my wife and I would look at each other and we'd say, it's just so great when we spend time outside as a family. We love it when our kids spend time outside. And it's at this moment that I realize that I have become the parent I swore I would never become. I'm much more interested in my kids spending time outside than spending time inside looking at a screen. Which raises the question, why? Why are parents obsessed with making sure their kids spend time outside? Most parents I talk to share a similar sentiment. We love it when our kids spend time outside. And while we may have a hard time articulating why that is, we all share this feeling that time spent outside is good for our kids. This feeling is articulated in a writing that was written a long time ago. Proverbs chapter 8 speaks about the value of spending time outside. And if you've been with us the last couple of weeks, you know that Proverbs was most likely written by King Solomon. And Solomon is considered to be Israel's wisest king. And Solomon writes Proverbs with the intention of passing along wisdom, highlighting the value of wisdom within our everyday life. Now, in order to make wisdom more tangible, Solomon very deftly turns wisdom into a person, a character within the story of Proverbs. And he doesn't make her just any character. Instead, he turns wisdom into a confident female. And so we're going to read what the character of wisdom says in Proverbs chapter 8. But it's important for you to imagine the most confident woman you can picture on the planet. In other words, Beyoncé. Imagine that Beyoncé has embodied what the values and the ideals of wisdom is and could be. And so when we hear this voice that is speaking in Proverbs chapter 8, imagine a confident woman like Beyoncé declaring what wisdom is within this planet. So with that in mind, let's read Proverbs chapter 8, verse 22. Wisdom says this: "The Lord created me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts long ago." When Solomon gives words to the character wisdom, what he is saying is that there's something about wisdom that was there at the very beginning. And the words that Solomon chooses for this character invite us to go back to Genesis chapter 1, where we read, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." Now, Solomon most likely knew the story of Genesis 1 quite well. And when he tells the story and when he hears the story of Genesis 1, he likes it, he champions it, but at the same time, he feels like something is missing. Because when he hears the story of Genesis 1, he hears about material things, but then he retells the story in Proverbs chapter 8. And it's here with the character of wisdom that he says, oh, you've left out the immaterial. So I'm going to retell the creation story with the immaterial essence of our being. It's as if the character of wisdom is saying, before the beginning, I was there. Wisdom was put into place in this universe before our material essence. So when we look at the 7 days of creation found in Genesis chapters 1 and 2, what Solomon is saying is that there was something before this. There was a prequel. And the point of all of creation is to point toward wisdom. The Lord created me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts long ago. And so Solomon adds to the creation story. So with that in mind, I'd like to read Proverbs 8, 22 to 31. These are all the words from the character wisdom. And she often refers to he. And whenever she refers to he, she is talking about God. And so we'll use some extra sounds to kind of amplify this creation language. And I'd like for you to listen to and allow these words to wash over you as you understand that Solomon is retelling the creation story. So with that in mind, let's read Proverbs 8, 22 to 31. The character of wisdom says this: "The Lord created me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts of long ago. Ages ago, I was set up at the first before the beginning of the earth. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no springs abounding with water. Before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills, I was brought forth. When he had not yet made earth and fields or the world's first bits of soil. When he established the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep. When he made firm the skies above. When he established the fountains of the deep. When he assigned to the sea its limit, so that the waters might not transgress his command. When he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him like a master worker. And I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, rejoicing in his inhabited world, and delighting in the human race." The point that the character of wisdom is trying to make here is this. Wisdom is hardwired into creation. Everything you see, every rock, every tree, every stream, every cloud, every desert, everything you experience outdoor is created and exists with a root, with a base note, with a common denominator of wisdom. And when we read those last 2.5 verses, when wisdom says, when God marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him like a master worker, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, rejoicing in his inhabited world and delighting in the human race. What wisdom is saying is that this existence is not corrupt. In fact, it is quite the opposite. It is filled with beauty and meaning and purpose. And what I find so fascinating is that so many Christians that I know will point to the creation story and immediately talk about the fall and talk about how there's a malfunction within creation and how creation has gone awry. But that is not the testimony or the story of the character of wisdom in Proverbs. Instead, she leans in close and says, all of creation is saturated with wisdom. Every part of the created universe you experience, whether it is through the lens of a telescope, the lens of a microscope, or through your eyes as a lens, it is all created and saturated with wisdom. And after making this bold proclamation of faith, the character of wisdom leans in close and says, now, my children, listen to me. Happy are those who keep my ways. She goes on to say, hear instruction and be wise and do not neglect it. Happy is the one who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting beside my doors, for whoever finds me, whoever finds wisdom, finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But those who miss me injure themselves. All who hate me love death. It is here that she points to creation and says, if you want to find wisdom, go outside. And when you go outside, you will find a happiness, a peace about yourself. Now it's here that we ask a very important question. This question is for anyone, regardless of your religious or non-religious background. Do you believe it's possible to be happy in this life? Do you believe it's possible to live a happy life? We are all aware that there is suffering. Is happiness a real root? Is happiness the point that we are striving toward? Or is happiness the exception to the rule? And it's here that the character of wisdom in Proverbs would say to us, yes. The key to happiness, according to the character of wisdom, is to search for wisdom. And there is something that happens when we spend time outdoors, when we appreciate creation, that leads to our happiness. This is the testimony of Proverbs chapter 8. When we go outside, we find that we are living happier lives. And while it's hard to articulate what happens exactly, I believe that this is why parents want their kids to play outside. The whole reason that parents are obsessed with their kids spending time outdoors is because we understand that there is some link to being connected to creation, to having your feet in the soil, to touching the ground, to breathing clean air that leads to our happiness as human beings. Now, I understand that when I start talking about the key to happiness, at this point, you probably get really skeptical, right? So let's bring in science, shall we? The one and only Brené Brown, who teaches at the University of Houston and is a social scientist, has done gobs and gobs of research to figure out what makes people happy. She writes about happiness in her book, Braving the Wilderness, which came out last year. In this book, Braving the Wilderness, Brené Brown says, across the years, the men and women who could most fully lean into joy were those who practiced gratitude. She re-emphasizes this point by writing a few sentences later, again, the key to joy is practicing gratitude. I've interviewed people who have survived serious trauma ranging from the loss of a child to genocide, and what I've learned over and over from 15 years of hearing and holding their stories is this. When you are grateful for what you have, I know you understand the magnitude of what I have lost. Dr. Brown tells us that the way to empathize with someone who is grieving is to talk about how grateful we are for what we have. She tells us that gratitude is the key to happiness. Now, she is not alone in this thought. The great Maya Angelou wrote in her book Celebrations, which came out in 2006, when she was talking about prayer, she said, "Let gratitude be the pillow upon which you kneel to say your nightly prayer." Sure, she talks about how you can understand that there is things to lament about. There are things which need to be fought against. There are times you need to stand up and point out the injustices of the world. But when you pray at night, may all of it be held on the pillow of gratitude. An Austrian Benedictine monk, a man named Brother David Stendel Rast, recently gave a TED Talk. And in this TED Talk, his whole point was how people can become happy. He has spent his life pursuing this understanding through a religious lens. He talks about in this TED Talk about how we have this sense that if we had more, then we would be grateful. If we just had that car or that title or that house or that health or anything that you can imagine, then we would become grateful. He says that is a myth. It's not happiness that makes us grateful, he says. Instead, it's gratefulness that makes us happy. Being able to look at one's own life and be grateful for what we have is what leads us to being happy. And when the character of wisdom in Proverbs 8:32 leans in close and says, "And now, my children, listen to me. Happy are those who keep my ways, for those who find me find life." What the character of wisdom is saying is that when you look at creation, there is this recognition that there is something so much larger than we are. And we could spend our entire lives working to create something as majestic as the mountains, but our efforts would fall short. And there's this sense that what is given to us through creation, through mountains, through oceans, through sunrises, through sunsets, through all of these different things are all a gift bestowed upon us by our Creator. Have you ever stood in the shadow of the mountain and felt humbled at your own existence? And rather than being intimidated by the mountain, are instead filled with awe and appreciation for what the mountain is and what your own life is. And there is this sense of gratitude that you may be a small person on a speck of rock floating through the universe, but it is a beautiful thing to be alive for just a few short moments on this planet. Have you ever taken in a sunrise or a sunset, depending on if you're a morning or a night person, and just been rendered speechless as you realize that there is nothing you could pay for that is as beautiful as this free gift of a sunrise or a sunset? If you have never felt that, then may I turn your eyes and ears toward an artist, the one and only Jay-Z, who in his most recent album, Everything Is Love, he talks about the magnificent of a sunset. He writes these words, "We watch the sky turn peach, summer's light like, summer's night like, Christ's masterpiece." And when we talk about why parents are so obsessed with their kids spending time outdoors, it's because there is something that happens that leads us toward happiness. I believe that thing that happens is gratitude. Creation inspires us toward gratitude. And the reason we spend time outside is to recalibrate ourselves, recenter ourselves, reground ourselves in an era, in a mindset, in a way of being of gratitude. And if we can learn how to be grateful, then I believe that we can learn how to be happy in the midst of a world that is filled with suffering. And yes, we can stand up against injustices. Yes, we can point out the sins that are happening around us. Yes, we can be angry when something needs to be put to an end. But Proverbs 8 reminds us that all this should be done with this root of gratitude. And there are few things more generous than the Creator's creation. And we spend time outdoors in order to bring us back to gratitude. And I believe that this idea that creation inspires us toward gratitude is a game changer. To give you an idea of how much this changes the way that we move and be within this world, I want to show you three different implications that happen if we trust this idea that creation is saturated with wisdom and that creation inspires us toward gratitude. So we're going to close out the podcast with three different things that we can take away from creation inspiring us toward gratitude. So let's start with the first thing. The first thing centers around the ideas of Paul. Now, Paul lived over 1,000 years after Solomon lived. And Paul wrote to churches regularly. And these writings would eventually become the books of the New Testament. Now, when Paul writes his letter to the Romans, he addresses both the Jews and Gentiles, which may mean nothing to you, but it's essentially Paul writing to both the religious and the not-so-religious people. The church in Rome is made up of people who have grown up and lived and breathed and moved with religion in every essence of their being, and there are also people who have never once practiced religion, and Paul writes to both of them. When Paul writes to the non-religious, the not-so-religious in the Romans, he writes in ways that very few of us Christians understand. He does not say to them, look, Gentiles, look, you not so religious people, you need to study your Bible, you need to pray more, you need to make sure that your attendance at church is stellar, and you've got to get right with God. Paul doesn't say any of that. Instead, Paul writes them with these words in Romans chapter 1, verse 20. He says, ever since the creation of the world, his eternal power and divine nature, invisible though they are, have been understood and seen through the things he has made. In other words, Paul doesn't say, hey, you need to read your Bible more. Instead, he says to the not so religious people, you have experienced the fullness of God's goodness expressed through God's creation. And rather than pointing them to the scriptures and saying, make sure you learn your Bibles, he says to them, just embrace the creation around you because the creation contains the fullness of the testament of God. In other words, creation is the scriptures, is the holy scriptures of the non-religious in the Church of Rome. I believe that nothing has changed today. Creation is still the greatest testimony to the Creator. And Christians, rather than trying to get non-religious people to start reading the Bible, should just point to the mountains, point to the sunrise, point to the sunset, point to the oceans and say, this is the full testament of a God who loves. And we should look at creation not as something that is temporary, not as something that is to be disposed of, but instead as something that testifies to its creator in the same way the Bible does and declare that creation is in fact holy. And the reverence that we show to the scripture, the way that we uphold the scripture and what it means to the religious Christians is important. And we should have the same attitude toward all of creation. And if you're like me, when you read news articles like the one that was published in March of 2018 in USA Today, which talks about the world's largest collection of ocean garbage is twice the size of Texas and it's floating in the Pacific Ocean right now, there is something inside you that dies, that recoils, that shakes your head. Because throwing trash into our ocean is not the way we should treat something that's holy. You see, the first thing I think that we can learn and act when it comes to this idea that creation inspires us toward gratitude is that we must protect and take care of this holy planet. Christians should understand how their trash impacts ecosystems. Christians should learn from scientists when scientists speak about the dangers of global warming. Christians should be leading the charge to do whatever we can to protect this holy planet. Why? Because this is the holy scriptures for the non-religious. And the same reverence and respect and ways that we uphold the Bible should be the same, if not more, toward all of creation. We must protect and take care of this holy planet if we really believe that creation inspires us toward gratitude. Which brings us to the second thing that we can do in response to creation inspiring us toward attitude. Now, at the beginning of this podcast, I spoke about a trip that my family got to take to Maui. Now, you may have heard this and said to yourself, must be nice. I'd like to go to Maui. How come you get to go to Maui and I don't? And there's this feeling that we could appreciate beauty more, we could appreciate the outdoors, we could grow in gratitude as long as we could go somewhere that was beautiful, somewhere like Maui. Well, if you felt that as I was telling you that story, I'd like to invite you to listen to another story. This second story happened about 10 years ago when I was in Montana. Now, I grew up in California, and then I moved to Montana to go to college, where I enrolled at Montana State University. Now, if you've never heard of Montana State University, I'll just tell you this, it's a lot like Harvard. And while I was at Montana State University, my parents would come up to Bozeman, Montana and visit me a couple times a year. And there was one time that they were visiting, you know, coming from California, that we were sitting in a living room talking, and then all of a sudden my mom says to me, Craig, come over here, quick, 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 quick. So I rush over to the window and I say, what, mom, what is it? And she points to two creatures and says, look, Craig, there's some deer. Now, I had to laugh at this point because on the way over to this friend's house with my parents, we had to swerve and miss like five deer along the way. And so we're at this house and my mom is super excited about deer. Why? Because she's from Redlands, California, and there's not a lot of deer walking around here. And what's fascinating is my response to my mom was like, oh, mom, deer, really? You're such a Californian, even though I was such a Californian. But I had spent years in Montana at that point, and at that point when I saw a deer, my reaction wasn't wonder or gratitude. It was indifference, because deer were everywhere. And Bozeman, Montana is a beautiful place. But in just a few short years, I found that I had taken it for granted. Which brings us to the question, wherever you are listening to this podcast, do you believe that where you live is beautiful? If you don't find the place that you live to be beautiful, then may I ask, why are you living there? Like, I don't want to be rude, but if you were to tell me I live in an ugly place, so move. Move. And if you say, well, my place is all right, it's not beautiful, but it's not ugly, I would say then keep looking. Because I grew up in Redlands, California, and I never heard anybody talk about how beautiful it was. But what I have found is that it is overflowing. It is brimming with beauty. For instance, every morning I get to walk my dog through Prospect Park. Prospect Park is a short walk away from my house, and it is filled with a wide variety of trees, and it is away from the bustle and the hustle of the city. And I don't know who set up what parameters or what council it was that decided that this plot of land should be set aside for public use, but I am grateful because there is this moment that I walk through this park in the morning, and after going through just a wide myriad of trees, I all of a sudden come to a clearing and I can see snow-capped peaks or panoramic vistas. And I am reminded about how beautiful this place is that I live. Another story about Redlands. A few years ago, my brother came to me and said, we're having Levi's birthday party, my nephew's birthday party, in just a few days. And I said, great, I'm there. Where is it? And Scott said, the Redlands Airport. And I said, really, Scott, the Redlands Airport? He said, yeah, it's a great place to hang out. And I said, no, there's no way that's a cool place to hang out. So we went down there one hot September evening, and I will tell you, I was blown away because there is this clearing, there is this vast space where you can see all the mountains at the same time. And it's away from the city. Not only that, but every now and then a plane either lands or takes off. And while we were out there, the sun began to set and we walked up and down the runway and it was a beautiful evening. I had no idea that I could go to the Redlands Airport and take in a beautiful view. And it's like 5 minutes from my house. A third story. One of my favorite things in the summer of Redlands, which can be brutal, it can be hot, is to go over to a friend's house who has a pool and just waste hours sitting beside the pool and telling stories underneath a hot sun. I love it. I love it. It's one of my favorite social activities to do in Southern California. Redlands is a beautiful place to live, and I am grateful that I get to live here. And I think the second thing that this idea that creation inspires us toward gratitude, this challenge that it puts forth, is it's a reminder that we as human beings are tempted to take the extraordinary for granted. It is a major temptation that all of us face at some point, to take the extraordinary for granted, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a panoramic ocean view, whether it's just something that is good within your own life, there is this tendency that we have to take the extraordinary for granted. And the more that we're aware of this temptation, the better we will be at being able to combat it, being able to remind ourselves of what is extraordinary and continue to be grateful for it, because gratitude leads toward happiness. Which brings us to the third tangible act that we can do in response to creation inspiring us toward gratitude. In order to talk about this third idea, I want to tell you about a short film I saw online recently. This short film is called The Important Places, and it's about a filmmaker who notices that his dad is starting to age. And as he is seeing that his dad is starting to age and slow down, it's really hard on the filmmaker. And so he creates this film called The Important Places, and he begins the film by reading a poem that his dad wrote for him on the day that he, the filmmaker, was born. This poem is called The Important Places, and the poem goes like this, and this begins the film. Child of mine, come as you grow. In youth, you will learn of secret places, the cave behind the waterfall, the arms of the oak that holds you high, the stars so near on a desert ledge. The important places. And as with age, you choose your own way among the many faces of a busy world, may you always remember the path that leads back to the important places. I love this poem. And the reason I love this poem is because there is so much value placed with spending time outdoors, particularly in your childhood. And through this poem, this dad wishes for his son in his very first moments of life that he will find wonder in the midst of creation. And then as he grows older and becomes busier, he'll make time to return to those places. So after that poem is read, the filmmaker gets an idea and he shares this idea with the audience. He says, I've heard my dad talk about kayaking down the Colorado River pretty much my entire life, but I've never gone to the Colorado River with my dad. I'm going to take my dad on a 28-day kayaking excursion through the Colorado River. And I'm going to have him tell me stories. I'm going to have him point out different parts of the river. And I'm going to learn what it's like for my dad to go back to the important places just like he wished I would do when I was born. And so he brings his dad out on a kayak and they go down the river. And it's a fascinating, very moving film because you see this man who is suffering and in pain begin to smile again. And the filmmaker equates this journey down the Colorado River to time travel. And he sees his dad become alive and remind him of the goodness of what it was like to be on this river as a young person and how good it is to come back with his son. You see, when creation inspires us toward gratitude, It's important for us to remember that we must develop rituals of gratitude. We must have practices, whether they're daily, weekly, monthly, or yearly, where we return, where we repeat what we've done before in order to bring us back to a grateful posture of life. When I was growing up, my parents took us on the same three trips every year. The first trip we'd always take was to Mammoth Lakes, California. I learned how to ski up there. I learned all of the secret places that were around this mountain. And I have countless memories with my cousins, with my siblings, telling stories and playing games in and around Mammoth Lakes. Every summer, my parents would take us to Lake Powell, which is like the Grand Canyon with a lake in the bottom. And it was here that I learned how to wakeboard and water ski. And there are so many memories I have of setting suns against the orange rocks that are I'm just so grateful that we got to do those. And then lastly, the third trip that we'd take every year is we'd go to Minnesota, where my grandma and my grandpa lived. And we'd spend weeks there at a time. And I remember going outside and just playing and playing and playing in the trees and the woods and the grass by the lakes and coming home at night and just being covered in mosquito bites. And I think it was miserable to be covered in mosquito bites. And yet, I remember having the time of my life in Minnesota. And what I think is so important is that if we really believe that creation inspires us toward gratitude, there is this sense that we have to keep coming back, keep returning to the rituals that recenter us in gratitude. And these trips then are found to be incredibly important because really good trips not only make you appreciative for the time that you are away, but the best kind of trips are the ones where you come back and you appreciate your life where you live every day even more. Because the whole thing is pushing us toward gratitude. And the whole reason we go outside, the whole reason we spend time outdoors is so that we may be inspired toward gratitude. And if we trust this idea, then I believe that it will push us, it will motivate us to protect and take care of this holy planet. It will remind us that a temptation we face is to take the extraordinary for granted. And creation will ask us to develop and practice rituals of gratitude, so that we might become people who are swimming with gratitude rather than being people who complain about the traffic or complain about the internet being down or complain about not having cell phone service. No. Spiritual maturity is the ability to live in this world and to have a posture, an attitude, a disposition toward gratitude. As the science shows us, gratitude leads toward our happiness. As the testimony of the Proverbs tell us, gratitude can be found if we spend time in creation. My brothers and sisters, may you and I become grateful people. May we swim in the depths and the beauty of creation and embrace the wonder of what it means to be alive on this planet. And may you find and see that happiness is all around you. May you see and embrace Jesus Christ in all.